It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex are here in, I guess it's our second to last show of the year. Lots to talk about, including the success of Apple Pay. The Apple Christmas ad, we'll do a little Grinching. And why United is giving 23,000 flight attendants their very own iPhone 6s. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 433, recorded December 16th, 2014. Uber for cops. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll have many more happy holidays as you grow and protect your wealth with this award-winning financial app. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by FreshBooks, the simple cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover your latest Apple news. And we got the full complement, the panoply, the array of fabulous Mac journalists here to do the thing that we call Mac Break Weekly. Start with Andy Iannocco, who was doing earlier a dramatic reading from something. What was that?
Wikipedia, actually.
Oh. Okay.
It was a St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V.
Hank Sank. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's a great speech.
Again.
That is a great
speech. It's a great speech. And like, as Alex started saying it as a microphone check. And then someone on Twitter said, hey, I'm surprised you didn't do that. I said, well, now I have Wikipedia. I know I can pretend to know this one.
That's the one where he's exhorting the British troops on into battle against the French, is it? And he says, you will, and your grandchildren, you will tell them that you were here on St. Crispin's Day. It's a wonderful speech. Thank you for classing the joint up, Andy, while I was getting
You know, ready. It's a lot easier to read something that's been written than to answer questions on the fly from subjects you barely have a grasp of.
Yeah.
So it's a solution, not the best solution, but it did fill time.
I'm thinking that's what I should do with a radio show from now on. Just read Shakespeare.
Lorem ipsum, Dolores said. I'm at consecutivus.
Have you memorized Lorem ipsum? Tell me you have.
I used to know it like to about, you know, 50 decimal places.
I still know, like, so you know, but that's the language of your people.
Well, that's the Soviet national anthem. which I learned in like all three verses simply as a way to mock someone at the Boston Computer Society that I didn't like. I was a teenager at a time. At the time, I'm willing to spend a lot of time learning something just to mock somebody else that I don't like. Hopefully I've progressed.
That's what's great about being a kid. You got time to do that crap. Alex Lindsay is here. He's from, it looks like from his barn in Pittsburgh, unless that's an amazing green screen.
I'm in Rwanda.
You're in Rwanda?
Yeah. So I'm back at the school.
That is awesome. Well, what time of day is it now here?
Oh, it's 9:30.
Oh, all right.
At night.
We'll get you to bed.
It's still relatively
midnight.
Yeah, I've had a nice full day of meetings and chatting and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. From Rwanda, Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps. And from Montreal, I think, Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com, right?
Yes, I am actually in Montreal. This is not a Pixel Core reconstruction.
That would be funny if we get a still of that. And then you're sitting here and then you walk into the frame. That would be funny.
That would be hilarious.
Send me a still.
Alex can do it.
We could do that one show and just see how long it takes for people to notice. Like, I will shoot like an empty like background plate of my background. Then we do one show where we're all in front of green screens and we've got each other's backgrounds behind us. I've got the Rwanda background. Renee has the Twit Studio background.
I like it.
I should warn you all, somebody has put eggnog in my coffee, and it's not just any old eggnog. It's spiked for Anthony Nielsen's birthday. Happy birthday, Anthony, one of our great editors. Apple wins the iPod antitrust trial.
Yay! Woo-hoo!
Really? Are you cheering for that? We talked about that last week.
Another lawsuit is over.
Did they win? I thought they were winning.
No, it's done. The jury has ruled in favor of Apple. Today, just moments ago, about an hour ago, the class action lawsuit for a class of 8 million people, the plaintiffs, which are basically lawyers and some guy they found on the street, the plaintiffs, as you may remember, they had trouble getting plaintiffs for a while, claimed $350 million plus damages because Apple wouldn't let music from other music stores like Rhapsody or Napster on its iPod. The jury deliberated just a few hours. It's an 8-person jury up the road in Oakland. They found that Apple's iTunes 7.0 was a genuine product. We're at 12 now, just to be clear. This has been going on for 10 years. Was a genuine product improvement and therefore not a violation of antitrust laws. And I don't even know why that was the issue, but that was the issue. The decision was unanimous. Well,
I think, didn't it turn out that the plaintiffs hadn't actually owned an iPod at the time?
Yeah, they kept losing plaintiffs. Yeah, the first one bought it after the deadline. The other one bought it with her husband's credit card. And so the law firm that her husband worked at was the actual owner, so she didn't have standing. But I think they found somebody over the weekend. You had to have an iPod, I think, between 2006 and 2008.
Well, I think, as Apple's critics would confirm, this only shows how intimidated and threatened Apple consumers feel by this industrial behemoth that needs to corrective action. That they suffer, but they don't want to stick their heads above the trench. That's just
Where is Judge Janice Cote when we need her?
Oh man, this is lawyers for the plaintiff had argued that Apple issued software, whatever, the plaintiff of the week, that Apple had issued software updates to cut off competitors' attempts to market products compatible with Apple's iPod. In fact, it's kind of sad because Steve Jobs, literally a few months before his death, was required to testify in this case and gave a video deposition, it was a waste of time.
You know how much it cost? It must have been millions of dollars.
Well, most of that money goes in the pockets of the plaintiff's lawyers. Yeah. Patrick Coughlin, an attorney for the plaintiff, said, "Oh, surprise, they plan to appeal the decision. We're not giving up this cash cow.
To the Supreme Court, baby.
We're going all the way."
Potentially, it would have been interesting if Apple had lost this suit, because one of the claims that they were making, that the suit was making, was that in at least one sense, that if you sell DRM content, you are required to make sure it's supported by every single device that's out there, unless you want to be slapped with an antitrust suit, which obviously would have been just absolutely impossible, and it's just not the way that any DRM content store has ever operated. Amazon makes part of its business to say that we're going to make sure that there are book players and video players for as many platforms as we can support. But can you imagine them having to respond to a suit saying, "Hey, I've got a Palm 5 and stop, and my Amazon video doesn't play on it, and you know, give me either a $100 gift card or let me have a Grown-Ups 2 playing on this, or else we're gonna file a lawsuit."
I'm a little sympathetic to the lawsuit because you remember that Apple forced you to erase your iPod if you wanted to hook it up to another iTunes. That was one of the issues. I think it's kind of silly to say it has to support other copy protection schemes. I agree with Apple. That's a non-starter. But copy protection, sue the right people is exactly right, Renee. Sue the record industry, because that's who imposed this on Apple.
And also, Apple has never blocked when the iPhone came out and the ability to run apps on an iPod Touch and iPad came out. They didn't block any competing stores from creating their own players for their own DRM content. So that's just bogus.
Right. The suit was originally filed in 2005. Unbelievable.
What color was the sky back then?
Invested it sensibly.
Just think, if they'd bought Apple stock in 2005, they would have had their billions.
Yep.
You know? Okay, so that's done. That is the lead story of the day. There's a lot of other little stories, including a leak that we might see new color Apple laptops this year. But first, I want to play for you. Get ready. Get your hankies ready. The Apple TV.
I'm crying already. I actually love this ad.
Thinking
about it. But hang on. Let me put on my extra cynical glasses for this one.
I think that's what Hannah Jane Parkinson, writing for The Guardian, did. She just ripped into this ad. Let me play it for you first, and then I'm gonna tell you what she said is wrong with this ad. Young lady going through grandma's stuff. You're not hearing it? It is not. Let me try. Well, you know what? It's very quiet at the beginning, I think. Yeah, she's just going through her stuff. So there's some albums, and here's a picture. Wait a minute. No, it's a vinyl record grandma recorded for grandpa in 1952. Well, she has a turntable.
My darling Raymond, though you can't be here for the
How does she know how to operate it?
It's so cute. Grandma.
Our love is here to stay.
Recorded Our Love is Here to Stay. Very multicultural, this family, by the way. I just having ramen. Oh, there's grandma sleeping with. She's using a guitar and, of course, an Apple Macintosh laptop. Christmas Day. Grandma comes down to breakfast. What is this on my cereal? A duet. Press play. Now, first of all, here's problem number one. Grandma knows exactly how to play back the iPod.
Seniors know how to use technology.
Okay, good. All right.
You'll get there someday too. Don't worry.
She puts in the earbuds and she presses play, and here's what she hears.
Very clear. Our love is here.
And there's some pictures of her dead husband.
Not for a year,
and grandma just starts to tear up, and there's it's a duet. She made a duet. This is when I start crying. Additional hardware needed. Happy holidays from
Apple. Thinking, if she found this record, did she find my Babylon 5 Star Trek slash fit? I hope not.
I think it's a...
It's cute.
It's a
cute commercial.
This isn't the tradition of Apple Christmas ads where they remember last year they had the emo kid who ended up, he was actually making this really nice video.
Yeah. They got crap for that and they got crap for this.
I don't think they're going to get crap for this. This is just The Guardian being grinchy.
And I think this is a better one than last year's. Also because it doesn't really look like an Apple ad at all. Mm. I really think they really fine tune this about the sentiment. And if there's Apple logos there, great. But I don't think this was designed as an ad so much as a video Christmas card of a company that has enough money.
Right.
You know what? We can spend money on an ad that doesn't necessarily push the button hard on our products.
Very light touch. You see her using a MacBook Air. You see grandma using an iPhone 6 to play it back, but it's not, you're right.
It looked like one of the Music Memory Project videos from earlier this year where they took iPods around to medical institutions and they had people with memory difficulties listening to them and coming alive because they remembered the music so well.
So here's what Hannah Jane Parkinson, the Grinch that stole Apple's Christmas advert, didn't like about it. She said... she says, there's no doubt this is a touching effort from Apple's marketing team. It's bound to cause a lot of tears wept into mince pies and sherry glasses. So you can tell this is from England.
But I'll
admit to me feeling mildly effective. But what kind of empathy void sociopath ruins her grandma's Christmas by reminding her of her dead husband, the love of her life, who is dead? Look how sad Valerie is. Tears glistening on her cheeks like little orbs of memories, fragments of a life lived with Raymond. Second, let's be honest, Valerie doesn't really give a crap about her granddaughter's duet. Valerie's just straight up into the fact that Santa brought her a new iPad Mini 3 because now she'll be able to watch RuPaul's Drag Race and Don't Tell the Bride incredible. From her bed. I'm so touched. There's also the fact...
fact.
It's fact.
It's indisputable.
Indisputable that the granddaughter who sits smugly on the stairs in the dark at the end of the video, and I'm going to use the word lurking, says Hannah, in fact, has the audacity to just rifle through Valerie's stuff to even stumble upon the record in the first place.
What granddaughter has not done that, though? That's the only thing.
I know. In fact, can I tell you something as an older person? I pray that my children have any interest at all in any of my pictures, recordings. I'm making movies of crap no one's ever going to see.
This article reads like personal damage, not like insightful commentary at all.
Poor Hannah Jane Parkinson had a terrible childhood.
I don't know if she did or didn't, but there's no point to this article. I don't see one.
Excuse me, but Valerie isn't dead yet. Valerie isn't Raymond. Have some respect. One can't just rifle through a grandmother's things. I really should be reading this with a posh British accent. In the hope of finding something special, in the hope of inheriting it. No.
To Raymond with love. I think she was just trying to be funny. It's fine.
It's fun. But it's like, you know, it's trolling. It's not
trolling. It's like sometimes you see, well, here's a funny take on it, and I don't want to keep invective on Hannah.
It's a great ad. It's heartwarming. It's done with extremely light touch. It's really a Christmas card from Apple with the slightest little bit of Apple in it.
Yeah. It's so hard to turn off the snark meter when you see these like holiday themed ads.
Right.
I still come back to this. One of those mall jewelry store commercials from might have even been two seasons ago, where they just this schmaltzy thing where they have I think the setup is supposed to be that, you know, here is someone who's stationed in the Middle East, and he had his son like go to Zales and buy a ring and give it to him. So, I'm gonna have to Merry Christmas now. I'm gonna have to have some help from my wingman over there, and it's like, you bastards! You're trying to take our good feelings about people who are serving our country and away from home for Christmas, and trying to rip it off of these good men and women and stick it onto your stupid tacky mall jewelry. Screw you! Now I don't think I want to get married if that means putting money into the jewelry industry.
Every kiss begins with K.
This article, like, if I wanted Rustin Cole to give me his analysis of Apple ads, I'd watch True Detective.
it's funny. Anyway, good ad. Nice Christmas card from Apple. Yes. And Hannah made a funny article about it. And she got some traction. We played it. We read her article. So there you go.
The culture of pessimism wins.
Yeah. I think it's more, you know, just British people are brutally unhappy.
as John Oliver said on an episode of The Bugle, after talking about like Britain's response to like United States being excited about some sports event, said that's how far down we've gone as British people. We are now disgusted by the simple concept of enthusiasm for anything.
It's hard to suspend your year-round cynicism this time.
It's all
of
that
year.
Being calm.
Yeah.
And carrying on.
It's all the being calm and carrying on. And it's like, just you got to let it out. You got to let it out. You got to be upset. You got to be happy.
Stiff
you can't
upper
just be
lip.
Calm and carry on.
I'm going to send a Doctor Who intervention.
Hey, by the way, all you press people who noted that Apple had pulled Bose products from the store, they're back. Now what do you say?
Negotiations successful.
Why? Negotiations successful. That's right. Apple has added some Bose sound products back to the online store, including the SoundLink 3, which I love. I have a SoundLink 2. It's a Bluetooth speaker. Sounds great. SoundLink Mini, the Quiet Comfort acoustic noise canceling headphones, which I think Alex Lindsay recommended as his pick of the week. We gave him
I use those little headphones on every flight. Yeah. It is like my little savior to get me away from. Yeah. It's like the old Calgon, take me away. You get in the plane, you put those on, you put a little switch, and it goes.
Yeah,
everything's gone.
They're awesome. Low footprint.
Yeah.
Too.
Yep.
But it doesn't. They still don't have the over the ears because the Beats brand is so big there. I don't know why. Speaking of negotiations, thank you. Finally, and this doesn't affect very many people. But Roku has finally made a deal with Comcast. We should do a show just like, this is why Comcast sucks.
We'd have material every single week, Leo.
Twix. This week in Comcast suck at you.
Yeah.
The serial podcast is about to end. We need to pick up those viewers and listeners that are going away.
So if you had an Apple TV, if you had a variety of internet-connected devices, you could, a Chromecast, fire up HBO Go on those devices, log in to your cable account, and watch, including Xfinity, but not a Roku. If you log in, even though Roku has HBO Go and Showtime, and if you had, for instance, I don't know, Time Warner, you could log in and use them. If you had Comcast and logged in, it would say, sorry, we don't support HBO Go or Showtime on Roku devices. Why? Because Comcast cares. Anyway, they've
about what? Let's speculate.
Waiting
about
to get Ryan back on the phone to discuss the issue.
Anyway, they've apparently negotiated after several months of negotiations. I have no idea what that could have been about. Comcast has finally said, and it starts today. You can actually Roku has finally said that you can now log into your HBO Go with your Comcast account and watch, which is good because Comcast's X1 box still thinks I don't subscribe to Showtime and HBO and won't let me watch on demand. So I've been using HBO Go to watch on demand.
You're long.
Well, I think we're going to see this unfold pretty quickly next year. So over the next 18 to 24 months, you're going to see almost every network, I think, unlatch themselves from cable and allow people to basically a la carte.
It's very
and of course,
exciting.
Comcast and Time Warner, and everyone's really worried, but we're hearing it from all kinds of different directions. If everyone's looking at how do they, you know, when and how are they going to launch their own brand?
In this case, I think it was HBO more worried about the federal government not letting it merge with Time Warner than anything else. I think they're just doing everything they can.
Or Comcast.
Like, yeah, Comcast, not HBO. They're just trying to look like the nice company. But we know it's a lie, Comcast.
Yeah.
HBO will be offering internet programming over the internet this spring, as you probably saw. This is very exciting. Not clear if you'll have to log in to an existing cable account and prove you subscribe on the cable. But that's what I'm thinking they're headed to,
yeah,
as you say.
Yeah, it sounded like maybe you wouldn't.
Yeah. It's unclear. Starting next year, HBO will be available a la carte to the 70 million households with basic cable or satellite service, and to the 10 million households with high-speed internet but no pay TV service at all. So this is from the LA Times. That tells you you don't have to have a cable subscription. Here's the deal: you're going to pay $20 a month for HBO. Is it worth it?
Sure.
Well, how much I pay for cable,
particularly. Just for HBO Go, because you don't just get current programming. You have access to everything that, pretty much, as far as I know, everything that they have still the rights to. So they have series that have stopped airing like 2 years ago. They have movies that aren't on like the standard cable rotation anymore. That's a pretty good get, I think.
And
and one of the things I think that's going to be really interesting is to see whether, you know, you're going to see another push at CES, most likely, of 4K. And one of the things that this starts to open up, we know that, you know, Netflix is going 4K next year. YouTube's already 4K, not streaming yet, but they're already playing back. The question is if Apple and Amazon and all the other ones are starting to go to 4K, but more importantly, whether these HBO, CBS, and other networks start to have an internet-only 4K solution, because it's something that the cable and broadcast won't be able to touch for 5 years. And it's something that all the manufacturers want to get into right now. And so I think that, you know, it'll be really interesting to see by the middle of the year whether HBO is putting any, like, for instance, if Game of Thrones comes out in 4K, the amount of damage it'll do to the TV industry is pretty profound.
By the way, that's the timing, I think, is that this spring when HBO releases the next season.
I think Amazon said something about 4K this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all talking about it because it's...
This confirms the notion that Apple's going to do a 4K Apple TV this year with an app store. And this Apple should jump on this. I'm confirming it. Apple should jump on this because here's a chance now with the cable deals starting to fall apart for Apple, in effect, to set themselves up as a de facto television provider by having an app store and allowing you to say a la carte, all right, I'm going to buy, I'll get Major League Baseball, HBO, and Showtime for $60 a month. A third of that goes to Apple. I use the Apple TV, got no cable connection, just an internet connection. Isn't that an opportunity?
Fantastic. That's my dream world, Leo. That's what world I very much want to live in. I've cut the cable cord. I have the Apple TV. I don't have very much programming on it. And the stuff I do, I buy piecemeal. And it would be fantastic if they had a box with a little bit more power in it, you know, an Apple A8, even A7 chip of some sort. They started experimenting with H.265 already in their video streaming technology. It'd be nice to move it over to iTunes. Word is they can get maybe, you know, twice the size for 4K that they're getting right now for 1080p content, which is still, you know, maybe hard given the broadband distribution in the US and Canada, but it's getting there. And it would be my ideal little box, and it would work great with all the other stuff that they're putting out. You know, you have CarPlay, you have AirPlay, you have all these technologies where it takes the content on your device or anything that you have with you and just puts it on any screen that you have. And it seems like all the technologies are in place for that now.
So this new HEVC, high efficiency video codec, or
HEVC
or H.265. What is the bandwidth for a good quality 4K video? How much do I need?
10 megs a second.
10. See, most people with cable, DSL maybe not, but most people with cable connections or fiber connections can do 10 megabits. So
Alex would know this better than me, but on iTunes at least, Apple streams 1080p lower than they stream 720p because they believe it's more forgiving. So it's not double the size or anything of 720p. And the current belief is that H.265 or HEVC is going to, like, they'll with the increased compression, it does take a lot more time to render it out, but with the increased compression, that it won't be four times the size of 1080p. It'll be about twice the size.
Netflix.
And that's about right. And the big thing is the big costs go to people like me who are trying to encode it. So
yes. Right.
The encoders are very, very expensive and very powerful slow, right? to do it. And yeah. Well, they're not slow. I mean,
they're not real time.
I'm looking at live streaming. Yeah.
Really? They are real time.
Yeah. But they're, you know, $60,000 a box. So
for House of Cards 4K in UHD, it's about 15.6 megabits per second on Netflix. But
that's still probably H.264.
Right. So maybe HFEC will get less.
Yeah. So That'll push it down to what we're seeing. I've seen some really great 10 meg streams that are you know, in the new codec on 4K. You know,
and it looks good. There's not a lot of blocking and artifacting.
It looks better than what you see in cable. I mean, you know, cable is pretty horrible.
Yeah.
So it's very, very clean. It looks very good, and I think
see macro blocking and solid colors, things like that.
I didn't see. Now it might have been what I was looking at. It had a lot of detail in it, so there wasn't a lot of those things there. But it did look very good. I think that it is very important for whoever's doing the compression to 4K that they do make sure that it looks good coming out of the gate, and then it's not horribly macro blocked, because otherwise you're not going to be able to tell the difference between 4K.
I see that
and
on
1080p.
Cable all the time and on demand and everything. You know, if you watch,
that's how I ruined Scott's. When Scott bought, this is years ago, when he bought his new, Scott Bourne bought his new, it was like back then, it was like a 70 inch or 60 inch. And he asked me what he brought me over. It was at his apartment in San Francisco, and he showed it to me. And I said, so does that macro blocking bother you at all?
Oh, don't tell him about it. He will see it forever now.
See,
he was so pissed.
He was so mad at me for so long. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, right there, you know,
you can't unsee it. Yeah. Scott Wilkinson uses Master and Commander, the Blu-ray of Master and Commander, which starts, it's such a great movie, but it starts in a very dark sea, you know, you're sailing ship in the
19th those clouds century. Are just killer.
And if there's going to be macro blocking, you will see it immediately in that.
Yeah.
Because it's just a lot of blackness and dark. And you want to see how much detail you see in there and how much
They have crazy people at all these companies who are just in charge of making sure that the transfers are good of the material that they have. Thing I saw in that press release too is that HBO is going to let MLB. They're basically shutting down their own in-house streaming in Seattle, and they're going to have MLB stream it all for them. So it looks like there'll be a market for companies that know how to do the streaming well.
Oh, that's good news, Alex.
It's good for me.
Yeah, that's exactly what they spent. HBO had spent $100 million on this Seattle operation, brought in a bunch of people from Microsoft.
Yeah.
What is his name? Breckus is gone. He quit when he heard about this MLB thing. They blame that for all the problems they had when they released True Detective and Game of Thrones. Everybody's trying to watch it, and it crashed on HBO Go.
Well,
for 9 months, he knew about a major flaw, a bug, and they didn't fix it. And that was the bug that caused the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, you know, the scale of which a lot of these things work is really hard to imagine. having to deal with millions of people all at one time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if we, when we, you know, when we take down,
but MLB does it.
Here,
they know how to do it.
Yep. It's just a matter of spreading it out enough on the edge.
More than that, you know, not only they serve a lot of streams, but they serve a variety of streams because they do every game at the same time. So they obviously have a pretty good back end.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about them.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping your holy grail may be here, Renee Ritchie. We may, you know, next year we may look back and say that was 2015. That was the year.
Again, if you look at the team Apple's assembled around the Apple TV, there's every reason to be hopeful.
I can't wait to get a resume from Brian Roberts, CEO of Comcast, looking for work. I cannot wait.
Send that to Leo.
Brian, you're looking for work. No, he already made his pile. He doesn't need it.
Yeah. Yet.
Let's take a break, come back. We're going to talk more about the Mac and the scramble for the iPod Classic. But first, a word from Personal Capital. We talk about money a lot on this show, a lot of our shows. And one of the things that I think is so important is planning for your retirement. And you may say, I think most of the people watching this show are going, I'm not going to retire anytime soon. You know, it comes faster than you think. And if you're doing it right, it's going to be a nice and easy transition. And that's why I use Personal Capital. I recommend you do too. I've been using it for 2 years now since I met its founder, Bill Harris. He was on our Triangulation show. He said, I got this little thing I'm starting up. Well, it's so great. First of all, you put all your accounts in there so you know exactly what, not only, for the first time ever, you know what your net worth is, where your money is, what it's doing, how it's performing. They'll help you with budgeting. They'll help you with your investments, with your 401ks. They'll tell you where you're overspending and fees. One of the most important things to do that I didn't even know about till I started using Personal Capital is rebalancing your investments so that you are planning intelligently for your retirement date. All of this can be done simply and easily and free. That's amazing. At personalcapital.com/MacBreak. You worked hard to make that money. Don't let it fritter it away with high-fee brokerages, high-fee mutual funds. personalcapital.com/MacBreak. No reason not to do it. It'll take just a couple of minutes. It's absolutely safe and secure. I've been using it for years, and it really, really does a great job. It's nice just to know this stuff. personalcapital.com/MacBreak. Give it a try today. It's free, and we thank them so much for their support. They're going to be back. They just signed up for 2015.
Awesome.
We love them. Apple stops online sales in Russia, saying, we can't figure out what the ruble's worth. Is the ruble going through extreme fluctuations right now?
It's all connected to oil. You know, so oil is dropping quickly, and you know, Venezuela is probably going to hit the ground. Iran's in trouble, and Russia's in pretty big trouble. I think it's 30 or 40% of their economy.
Russia's currency went down 19% today.
The Canadian dollar's under some pressure too.
So when that happens, Apple doesn't know what to charge for an iPod or an iPad, so they basically shut down sales on the web store.
Yeah. Russia even had some sort of an amnesty in place for if you're Russian and you have been making money outside of Russia, one of the reasons why they've been doing that is because if you bring it back into Russia, they will just basically hammer you for it. And they've been saying that we will give you an amnesty. So if you just take the money you've been making outside of our country and just bring it back into our country, we swear we will not nationalize it.
Oh, you can trust Putin. You can trust Putin. So the ruble, according to a spokesman for Apple, our online store in Russia, currently unavailable while we review pricing. We apologize to customers for any inconvenience. Wow, I don't remember. Rwanda went through hyperinflation, didn't it, Alex?
No, Zimbabwe.
Oh, Zimbabwe.
Rwanda's actually pretty stable, but Zimbabwe went into hyperinflation where literally lunch would be twice as much the next day. Wow. You know, and it would be, you know, I think I bought one lunch for over 50 million.
You brought me a billion dollar note or something?
I think it was crazy. $100 million. I think $100 million or a billion. Yeah. Note. And they weren't even, the funny thing is they weren't real notes. They had expiration dates. When you know you're in trouble when the money has expiration dates. So it was, but then Zimbabwe just got rid of it was all their own cash. So once they got rid of their own currency, went to dollars and rand and
I'm tempted to buy this actually. Yeah. It's on Amazon in their holiday toy list. A $100 trillion banknote from Zimbabwe. It's only $21.95 and Amazon Prime.
That is awesome.
That's, That's so sad. Like, no, your country's going through enough problems as it is. Your currency is being sold as playthings for wealthier nations, for children. Oh, my
God.
You know,
it's got a yak on it. Come on.
Leave behind whatever you've got. It's time to leave.
I got into a lot of trouble because I brought a whole bunch of Zim dollars home one time and I gave them to my kids to play poker with, you know, because it was
oh,
great.
Oh, perfect.
It was like, I raise you $100 million, and it was like a real dollar. Yeah, I mean, real perfect. Bill, you know, and one of my friends in Zimbabwe, when he found out, was mortified.
Well, some of the reviews on this are pretty negative. We got a 1-star review saying it's just not what it used to be, worth what it used to be. they do not come with an authenticity certificate, so just a word of warning. It might be fake. I don't know.
It's worth as much or more than the original.
$21.95, it's worth a lot. What do you think the $100 trillion was worth at the worst?
Back then?
Yeah.
About $10. Wow. Maybe less, maybe a dollar.
Wow.
It got pretty wow. out of control. It just got to a point where it was just going up so fast that you could do a PhD on just the Zim, because what's crazy is that it went crazy, but the people didn't go crazy. So business was like, you know, people would just figure out how to do it every
That's
day.
Awesome.
And they,
That's awesome.
And it just became this, you know, admittedly, I think Zimbabweans are a fair bit cooler headed than Americans. And so I don't know if Americans would handle it the same way, but
they may also have had a kind of robust barter system in place and things like that, that allowed them to continue in
it. It was a little bit of barter. It was some barter. What happened was, is that there's so much money coming in. So there was, you know, as this all happened, you know, millions left the country and there was right. so much remittance coming back into the country that the reason that this was happening was because people were bringing rand and pounds and dollars in right. over Western Union and then needing to cash them. And so it was kind of, that was what was kind of driving a lot of this. And so, it was a fascinating time to be there. I'm sure for the folks in the rural area, it was not a fascinating time. It was rough for, you know, if you had access to US dollars, either through remittance or business or, you know, whatever, there was a lot of good things about it for those people, because, you know, if you had a loan in Zimbabwean dollars, it became worthless. So I had a friend who bought a $60,000 house, and it was worth the loan was worthless by the time he had paid $10,000 into it.
Yeah, there's no question this kind of hyperinflation is horrible for people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, I remember we all saw pre World War II, the Weimar Republic, people paying for stuff with wheelbarrows of cash and stuff, and and that led to the Nazi takeover of Germany. So it can go very badly wrong.
Yep.
So we wish for our compatriots. They're not compatriots. They're our friends. Our fellow humans Russia. We wish the best and hope things settle down a little bit. And I'm sorry buy an iPod today.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, you know it's a big business when you're being, you know, directly affected by, you know, world,
yeah.
you know, whatever, you know, yeah. so, you know, the United States started fracking, and then Saudi Arabia decided they want to cut them off and make it worthless to frack. And then,
oh, is that what this is all about?
It's a big chunk of it. So the, wow. you know, the fracking's
because
worth.
I know OPEC decided not to raise oil prices.
Well, fracking is profitable.
I see.
At a certain rate.
Yeah.
I believe the rate. I'm not positive, but I believe the rate is about $63 a barrel or whatever. And so, by pushing it far below that, it just it puts a lot. It'll put a bunch of most likely a bunch of companies that are leveraged. They can't pull. They can't do it right now, and so it'll put them under. But it won't really slow things down. It puts the United States in a perfect position because they benefit when the
either way
fuel goes down, and they benefit when the fuel goes up. It's you know, they win one way or the other.
Judge Denise Cote oil antitrust joke to be
you
made
just
here.
You don't like Judge Denise Cote, do you?
I like the appeals court today. I thought that was great.
What happened in the appeals court? This is the Apple ebook thing is going on. It's in appeals.
Yeah, and two of the three judges were fairly critical, saying that one, she applied the wrong standard, and the other that Apple there's an argument to be made that Apple was trying to stop a monopoly, a company who was basically dumping
Amazon.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see. And the third judge didn't really go one way or the other. So.
Yeah, interesting. This is the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New York, and of course, no matter what happens here, I'm sure Apple, or if Apple wins, the publishers will appeal, or the U.S. actually it's the DOJ now, will appeal, and it'll continue on. But
and they have 6 months to come to a decision now. So it's not a swift justice.
I love it. Judge Dennis Jacobs asked Department of Justice lawyer, why is it wrong for the publishers to get together to defeat a monopolist that's using predatory pricing? Why?
It's like mice. It's like mice getting together to fight a cat, they said.
It's like mice getting together to put a bell on the cat. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's translated. Yeah,
this one could turn around pretty quickly.
It's only antitrust when it doesn't improve our position.
Right. It the settlement was $450 million. That's some money that Apple would save, although I imagine the court case costs a lot, too.
And they're double or nothing right now in there.
Yeah, so double
they,
or
if
nothing.
If they lose, they pay. If they
That's
win,
a good way to put it. Double or nothing. How about 3 out of 5?
Yeah. Well, it's because it's weighing two different kinds of monopolies. It's weighing a monopoly against, you know, the lower consumer prices, but that's not always the best result of a monopoly. Sometimes right. you want to increase competition. So it's interesting. It's an interesting phase of electronic law.
Wow. Dozens more companies sign up for Apple Pay. Apple Pay, obviously a great success for Apple. On Tuesday, that's today, according to the Bits blog, Mike Isaac writing in the New York Times, the company announced it had signed up dozens more banks, retail stores, and startups for Apple Pay, including SunTrust, Barclaycard, and USAA, my bank. They say now Apple supports cards that represent about 90% of the credit card purchase volume in the U.S. TD Bank North America and Commerce Bank also joining 10 others.
Well, and you know, I think that the interesting thing about this, the way it works, I think, is that for a lot of the banks, they can't be left out, because what happens is as soon as you put your bank, you know, into your phone, your chances of using all the other cards right. that you have drops dramatically.
So I know that because my USAA card, I tried to enter it into my wallet and it said no. And so I don't use it. I use my B of A card.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So obviously
and that terrifies those
there's
banks.
Nothing, no reason not to sign up. Let's face it.
And I love it that suddenly all these NFC terminals have popped up so I can use my NFC Canadian credit card at all those.
Well, see, that's what's great about this. And I think I really want to underscore this. This Apple Pay only works for Apple iPhone users. However, what it does is it fosters the tap-to-pay ecosystem.
The hardware works with anything that uses NFC payments. Yeah. So it works with Google Wallet everywhere.
Almost all phones now have NFC built into them.
Most Android phones, not all. It's not a feature for budget phones, but it is in pretty much every $200 with $200 with 2 year contract phone pretty much has it.
Yeah, I only use
all my credit cards, all my bank cards, all have the Wave chip, the NFC chip in them, so I can use that any place that has a regular NFC terminal. You just tap the card the same way you tap your phone.
You do have to have a 6 or 6 Plus to use Apple Pay on a phone. Mm-hmm. From Apple, do you think in some ways that might actually backfire a little bit on Apple, that people might say, "Well, I'll just use my old Android phone."
Control my wallet.
You're proposing that someone has an iPhone and iPhone and will buy an Android phone instead of a new iPhone. If they were going to do that, they're going to do that anyway.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And then the watch is going to support the NFC as well, so you'll be out with your watch on and just tap your watch to pay. So.
Actually, someone asked me a question that I didn't know for certain what the answer was. If you have an Apple Watch with NFC, but you do not have an iPhone 6 in your pocket, does Apple Pay still work? Does the secure area inside the watch trump the lack of a secure zone inside the phone?
Oh, that's interesting. So you have a 5S or some other Apple phone.
My understanding, and it could be wrong because I'm just basing it off recollection, is that you authorize it once in the morning, and as long as the watch doesn't leave contact with your skin, it stays authorized for the rest of the day.
That was authorized by
a 6 only, or could you authorize with a 5S?
It's essentially transferring it to the – I believe it has to come from the phone. I'll try to find out. But
Curtis B. in our chat room says Apple Watch is supposed to work with a 5S because a 5S can pre-authorize the watch even though it doesn't have NFC. But the watch does, so it can pre-authorize the watch, and then you can use the watch even though you don't have an iPhone 6. That's what Curtis says in our chat room.
If so, it would probably work with a 5 as well because it's compatible. I'll try to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
The chat room seems united. In their opinion, that the 5 and 5S will work.
That's the difference between being, for me, it was like, there's a big difference between my being like 90% sure and completely sure, because that's a big 10% if you're telling people it really was one of those, oh yes, I believe, but all requires is NF, but the chip has,
it's not clear, is it?
I'm going to pretend I didn't see that question. And well,
it's also not worth really making an opinion until it ships, because things can and will change up until the week before it ships. Yeah. So like it could, we saw that with some other support where it worked with a 5 in beta and then didn't work with a 5 anymore in shipping software. So I hate giving people expectations that, you know, may or may not.
Yeah. Well, we can say with certainty, because it's here on the Apple Pay site at apple.com/Apple Pay, that you will be able to use an Apple Watch with an iPhone 5S and Apple Pay, touch to pay.
So does the transitive property of mathematics apply to Apple Pay?
Yeah. Let me see if I can find that text in here. Because, by the way, lots of new retailers, including Staples, added as well. That's kind of, to me, that's more important. Okay, here we go.
Well, and I think that-
here we go. See this? Apple Watch paired only with the iPhone 5, 5C, 5S, 6, or 6 Plus, you will be able to use the watch in stores, but not in apps. So there's
the in-apps is on the phone. So the in-apps has to
be in the phone. So there you go, Andy. That answers your question right there on that grid. That's from Apple, the company Apple.
But the check mark is grayed out, as though they haven't colored it in yet.
And I think that one of the things that was brought up in that article was, you know, they were talking about when you're shopping at I can't remember which Golden State Warriors or one of the basketball teams, there's a lot of demand destruction by the line. So the line is you see a long line to get a hot dog or whatever, and you just don't bother. Oh, I'll go get it later.
The Orlando Magic. Yeah.
Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
So the issue, the real thing with this is removing that friction. And I think that this is just the beginning of removing that friction. I mean, really making that easy where we're definitely going to see where you're ordering it at the seat. You're ordering, being able to, and if you see what's, I think we're going to talk about, but if you look at what's happening with United is just removing almost all the friction of interacting with the airline, with the iPhone. And so I think that this is just part of that and reducing those lines and making it a lot faster.
Alex Martins, chief executive of the Orlando Magic, says, quote, "One of the biggest pieces of feedback we get from our fans is that the food and beverage lines are too long. It actually keeps them from going to the concession stands. They don't want to miss the action. I know that. I've missed a whole quarter of football waiting for a hamburger. It was pissed me off no end. And the burger, I never even got to. Eventually, I just said, screw it. Keep your damn burger.
Soccer fans are fine, but basketball fans are.
actually, this was an Oakland A's game. It was at the Coliseum. And there was the burger stand. Everybody was irate, furious. But actually, that wasn't Apple Pay. That's because they were cooking the burgers one at a time. he says, this and technologies like Apple Pay will speed up our service. Now, this is an interesting quote because I don't understand what the this is. It must mean tap and pay in general. This and technologies like Apple Pay will speed up our service. I don't know. This is the New York Times article. So other companies that accept Apple Pay now, Winn-Dixie and Albertsons, Amway Center, that's the home to the Orlando Magic, Staples, Whole Foods, of course, has been doing it for a while. McDonald's has been doing it for a while. But in every case, am I wrong? But I think in every case, if they take Apple Pay, that means they'll take other tap-and-go solutions.
Yeah, that's been my experience.
Disney, Lyft, Uber, Airbnb.
And by converse, if a retailer deliberately destroys NFC to stop taking Apple Pay, you also can't use other NFC technology.
Right. And that's, of course, was that CVS?
Yeah, Rite Aid.
Rite Aid.
That's going to bite that group in the butt really hard. Because if Apple Pay did not come out until, let's say, February of next year, maybe this other payment system, a currency, would have a chance, but they've got 6 months of momentum and 6 months of acceptance. And now I personally, I'm in the sort of position where I'm actually disappointed if I go to Panera and the manager says, oh, well, there's no line over there at that far register. It's like, but the far register doesn't take Apple Pay. I don't want to pay the old fashioned.
That's why there's no line.
When the machines are down, people here just walk around aimlessly. We don't know what to do anymore. Someone reached for cash
part of the reason why I wanted to buy a soda so I could tap and pay. That's the whole reason why. Well, and that's the sort of cultural thing that's happening over the next 6 months.
And I also think that for some of these organizations, it will not be a big deal, but the coupons are more important. But one of the things I have to say is that I never want to, as a consumer, I never want to be behind someone with a coupon. And I don't care how much, you know, if I see coupons like sticking out of their purse, I don't care how much the next person is, because you know it's not going to match up. You know, there's going to be like 5 minutes of like, you know, and half the time it costs me money because I just go, here, let me, how much is that?
Imagine the QR code with currency. Can I just pay that?
Yeah. And by the way, the converse is not true. Patrick Delahanty over here in our programmer is saying, that he went to the Lego store and they do have Tap and Pay, but they don't have Apple Pay. So the opposite is not always true. You you may have not done a deal yet with Apple Pay, even though you have Tap and Go. That won't be for long, though.
Yeah. But I can just imagine. I can imagine at these stores at Walmart and everything else of people with like very inexpensive Androids that they don't really know how to use, trying to find the currency, trying to find the coupon that they saw. And
it's the QR code, Alex. They got to scan the QR code. And
it's slow enough. Like it's slow enough sometimes on Amtrak where people have their tickets on their phones, and I turn up the brightness to maximum. I rest it on top of the seat back so the person can use the scanner source. But it sometimes causes delays. For me though, the absolute disconnect of that alternative is that there is no way in hell that I want to let Walmart and CVS and 7-Eleven, all these other stores, have an app on my phone that has access to my location and my contacts even when I'm not buying something. That's just stupid. That's ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to install it. I'm not even going to install it on my phone, let alone install it and not use it.
Right.
So apparently Scooter X in our chat room has just sold another iPhone 6. Who is it? Just said, oh, you've convinced me. Jim Tez says, I'm running out to buy a 6 Plus now. Bye. Thanks.
Be right back. Getting iPhone 6 Plus.
Before you run out the door, Jim, you might want to check out gazelle.com for your old smartphone. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E is the place to trade in your existing electronics, get a little cash in your pocket so you could buy the new thing. And the nice thing about Gazelle, of course, 30 days to decide. Get the quote now. It's good for 30 days. You don't have to actually send them a product at all. Or you could decide in the next 30 days. It gives you time to go out and get the new 6 Plus, for instance, and set it all up, get it all working, and then pull the trigger. They'll send you a box with a shipping label on it. You don't have to pay shipping on anything. They'll turn it around if you forget to wipe the data, or maybe it's broken because they do buy broken iPhones and iPads, and you can't wipe the data. They'll do that, and then they'll send you a check, a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card, which they bump 5% as their way of saying thank you. By the way, Gazelle now is selling. You see, if you go to gazelle.com, you'll see buy certified. You can buy pre-owned iPhones, Samsung Galaxy phones, and iPads directly from Gazelle. This is a great thing. If you've lost your phone or you broke it, you can go back and get a new one that is gently used. Actually, they have two different ways to do it. You can get certified like new. Of course, that's going to cost a little more, but that is essentially a brand new device, or certified good, which might show some gentle signs of wear, but will save you a little bit of extra money. All devices, of course, are put through Gazelle's rigorous 30-point inspection, so they are fully functional, and you have 30 days to return it risk-free. So this is a great way to, if you lose a phone, or, you know, like me, your kids keep breaking phones, next time I'm going to Gazelle, people often say, well, what happens to the stuff that we sell to Gazelle? Well, they resell it sometimes on eBay, but the best stuff they save for their store now, which is great. You can even buy a 6 or 6 Plus in the Gazelle Certified Gadget Store. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. The best place to sell and buy your gadgets. Gazelle. Let's see. Oh, by the way, I should reopen that tab, but analysts expect that Apple Pay alone is going to be a $34 billion business in 4 years. And this is a hefty new business for Apple. Did you see the infographic on what Apple makes money on? Did we put that in the rundown here?
Yep.
At the top? This is where Business Insider did this. This is where Apple's money comes from. And I thought this was, we knew this, but when you see it in an infographic, so the bigger the bar, the more money they get. And the iPod, the little thin bar, and then it gets thicker with accessories. They make more in accessories than iPods. That's interesting. Then iTunes.
More than everything that iPods.
Yeah, iPods is their tiniest division. Then the Mac.
Only makes $2.5 billion.
Well, see, that's the thing. These are in billions.
Exactly. we're talking about the loser product line that generates $2.8 billion a year.
Pretty soon you're going to add Apple Pay, I think, to this.
Well, that was like when the iPhone 5C was a disappointment because it was only the third most popular phone in the world.
Number one, of course, iPhone. And this really tells you a lot about what Apple's business is these days. The iPhone is so much bigger, like a 4 times bigger than the iPad or the Mac. That makes
Look at the Mac go, Leo.
Huh?
Look at the Mac go. I mean, look how
the Mac is $29 billion. It's still a big business.
That's growing.
This is for fiscal 2014. So this is a year. I don't think Apple's going to turn their back on the Mac, but you see what's important.
Well, and the revenue for the iPhone, I believe, is almost twice Google's entire revenue.
You're kidding.
I mean, I think Google's revenue per year is $67 billion,
Holy
something like
cow.
That.
According to the chart, if you scroll down, yeah.
Holy cow. So Apple revenue total stocked up against other companies.
There's only two ahead.
Walmart makes $483 billion. This is revenue, not profit. $483 billion revenue. Exxon, $392. Apple, $220. But as you say, the $121.5 billion revenue on the iPhone is actually bigger than Google's total revenue by almost twice. Facebook's only $11 billion. God, you got to feel sorry for Facebook.
Amazon just profits down to zero.
You know what? You shouldn't. If you only make $11.2 billion a year, you shouldn't be spending $22 billion on an app.
You should listen to your mom and get that real estate license because admit it's not working out.
It's not working out.
It was a good try, but admit it's not working out. Your band is not going to make it.
Time to have plan B.
It does go show you that this business model of let's sell things that are really expensive.
That's a good business model.
I know there's a lot of room for sub-$1,500, sub-$1,000 laptops. Let's let other people get that. Let's sell the $1,500 to $2,000 ones.
But you know what's fascinating?
Let's sell the tablet. Let's not sell the tablet that costs $99 and is good enough for almost everybody. Let's sell the $500
one.
You
know what's fascinating, though, is that wasn't always that way. In fact, remember what we used to say, whose wallet would you rather have, Bill Gates or Steve Jobs? Because Microsoft was just cashing it in because they made software. Yep. There was no cost to make it. It was just bits, and it was almost all profit once you cover your R&D. But but even Microsoft now wants to be in the hardware business. I don't know, but somehow something shifted in hardware.
Steve Jobs probably had a better designed wallet. I mean, if we were talking specifically about the wallet,
Jobs' wallet looked good. It just
nice
wasn't
leather
fat.
Stitching. Yeah,
just wasn't
you can only
fat.
Put Apple bucks in it.
Yeah,
a beautiful aluminum wallet.
I love that infographic.
And
though.
This wallet really has razor sharp edges.
Yum!
It's a screamer.
You just have to hold it correctly. It won't cut you as long as you hold it correctly.
Now, you will need special pants to fit it inside here, but these are the best pants we think that's ever been made.
That's that old joke, right? You know, wallet 2014 is not compatible with pants 2013. You're going to have to upgrade to pants 14.
So if Apple's making so much on Apple Pay, what would Samsung do? Oh, yeah, copy it. Samsung is in the process of launching its own tap-to-pay solution. But why not, right? Because Samsung can't use Apple Pay. So they're going to launch an Apple Pay competitor next year. The technology
is going to be an embarrassment.
It's because you have to have a Samsung phone.
Oh, man.
It's a good feature for Samsung users. I just hope that the user experience is good. I mean, if there's one thing I wish that they would steal more of, it's not just the trappings, not just the designs, but the actual user experience. Just please steal as much of that as possible.
Well, as far as I can tell, you know what? I'm going to have an embarrassing admission here. I have not used any of the tap-to-pay solutions ever.
Leo.
I use credit cards and cash.
Pure cash.
So I just have it.
I use the giant stone coins of the Yap Islanders.
It's a bartering system. I'm a little nervous about using it. I'm a little scared. No, I just haven't had occasion.
The frustrating one is ATMs, actually. You know, if the first card I put onto my phone was my ATM card, and you tap to pay, and then it asks you to put your code in. I'm like, well, that's not what I wanted at all. You know, right. So the credit card ones are the only ones that are really seamless.
They do have credit card tap
to
pay.
But I have to say,
Google Wallet, as far as I could tell, is just as easy as Apple Pay. You tap it.
Not really, because one of the really good assets of Apple Pay is Touch ID, because Google Wallet periodically requires you have to set a passcode for Google Wallet, And so to authenticate that you really do have authorization to control this account, occasionally you have to tap in that that PIN. So if you haven't used it in about a day or two, like when I enter the Panera, I'm opening the Google Wallet app and tapping in the code to make sure that I'm ready to go as soon as it goes. And so that's,
wait a minute. If you have your Google Wallet out and you tap it, occasionally, not every time, it will ask for the four-digit PIN. You don't have to open it ahead of time.
You don't have to open it ahead of time, but that will save you that step. Like Alex says, I don't want to be the person who's holding up the line because I have to take the my phone off of the tap to pay thing and then key something in and then put something back on.
So it doesn't just pop up a PIN number and say type this in.
Well, it will, but I'm saying I would rather spend that 15 seconds on my own time while I'm waiting in line rather than do that when people are like waiting to get to my
Alex is behind him in line.
It's marginally easier. It's marginally easier to press your finger to it than to go one bum bum bum. But that's pretty marginal.
No, it's not marginal. I mean, would you rather just simply do something that is completely analog or do something that requires the digital parts of your brain? I'd run if something like Touch ID were available.
We're getting a little lazy now, Andy.
Not lazy. We want something that's more convenient. It's like why are you wearing a shirt that's comfortable rather than something that's maybe a little bit too tight and has like tags that stick in you? Because you have the option of not having the thing that is not pleasant.
Well, and the other thing is that I now, when I'm in a public place and I'm going to put my code in, I find it, I feel like it's insecure to put my to put my number in. I don't want to
see your PIN.
I just want to put my thumb down.
That's definitely an advantage. I should say that you can change your PIN at will. This is not your ATM card PIN. This is basically a passcode for Google Wallet. Right. So if just like good password hygiene is always good password hygiene. I am aware of the idea that now if someone notices that I have Tap to Pay installed on this phone and active and sees me tapping in a code, they will see that, well, now this phone is a lot more valuable for me to steal. But that would only be true if they couldn't get through to my lock screen. So, but that's another reason why Touch ID is such a great thing for not just for unlocking the phone, but just for so many things across the iOS experience.
Well, maybe this is why Samsung wants to do this, because they do have a fingerprint reader in the S5 and the Note 4.
They just want to do it because they don't have it and they know that it's popular. Samsung is a very, very fine company. I do think that they do more than just copy Apple, but the thing is, oftentimes, their only motivation to do something is because they've seen it as a popular product or service elsewhere, and they want it inside their portfolio too, as opposed to Apple and Motorola and other companies, and even Microsoft, where they think that this is a great idea. We're going to make this such a great product, and we're going to be really proud of this. I rarely get that sort of feeling from anything that Samsung does.
Samsung's actually working with LoopPay to do this, and LoopPay has been around for a while and is pretty popular with people who use it, because it is not just tied to the phone. You can have a LoopPay fob if you wish, or this works in more stores, a LoopPay digital payment card with a mag strip.
One more card. I agree with Andy. I would like to see many more Samsung shaped dents in the universe. I think that would be grand.
I just want to see them make more of a Samsung phone. From a great height. Is that true?
No, those are Nokia dents. Those
Nokia dents.
Microsoft. Did you see the Huawei announcement today, Leo?
No, what did Huawei announce?
They had an Honor 6, and now they have an Honor 6 Plus.
Oh, please. Is Huawei the company where the CEO dresses just like Steve Jobs in a turtleneck?
Hugo Barra?
Yeah. Well, Hugo Barra works for them from Google.
Yeah.
He was a big Android guy. In fact, one of the great demo guys at Google who went to work for them. Huawei does have the biggest battery of any phone, and now they've announced a phone that is thinner even than the iPhone 6.
Because 6 Mega was taken, 6 Extreme was taken.
So all 6 the Plus. 6, yeah. Yeah.
Xiaomi is the company you're thinking of, Leo.
I was thinking Xiaomi, which is just unapologetically copying. Yeah. Huawei is not.
No, they're apologetic.
And it's company. Interestingly, their 6 Plus, like the American 6 Plus, is 5.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. They call it the Huawei Glory. The Huawei Glory 6 Plus. 1080p, 5.5 inches. It's running its own proprietary Kirin chipset, which is the name of a Japanese beer, so I don't. it's octa-core, 4 Cortex A15s, 4 Cortex A7s, a Mali GPU, 3 gigs of RAM. Yeah. I don't know. Plus, I feel funny about buying a phone from China. Oh, wait a minute. They're all from China. Never mind.
Yeah.
2 8-megapixel camera sensors at the back.
I think it looks like an interesting phone. I just find it interesting that, you know, Plus is suddenly the sexy name when it really wasn't
six
before.
Plus.
Well, Apple II Plus.
Plus. Yeah. It's a plus-sized phone. So you started this conversation, Alex Lindsay. iPhones going to every United flight attendant. They're all getting 23,000 of them will all be carrying iPhone 6s. What are they doing with them to make it easier for you to do what? To pay them?
Well, they're talking about, I believe in that article, they're talking about the ability, for instance, for you to do some of the stuff that we would do with like Virgin America, where instead of you could order, you know, I want a gin and tonic and the chicken wrap or whatever it is. I don't have to, I mean, I can literally do that from my seat. And when she gets there, she doesn't have to figure that out. She just, you know, it's already been charged. She just hands me the stuff. And it would incredibly speed up the, you know,
but,
the process.
But don't they need like a square or something to do that? I mean, can you do tap and pay in reverse with an iPhone? Like, can somebody pay me by tapping my iPhone?
I don't know. I mean, or it could be something that you do through your United app, you know, so.
I'm just wondering why they need an iPhone.
Well, I think I think that they want to tie that whole ecosystem together. And my guess is that the airline decided they're already doing that. They had, I think a couple of years ago had rolled out iPads for all the pilots and they're trying to move to be paperless. And I think they don't want to, I bet that their developers were like, we just already develop everything on iOS. We just want to keep going.
Delta Airlines gave Surface tablets to their pilots.
There was a joke on Twitter that wherever their hub is, like if your hub is in Seattle, they went with Microsoft. If your hub is in California, they go with Apple. If it's somewhere else, they went with Samsung.
And in unrelated news, all the Delta pilots have now started to work for United. Virgin Atlantic has tested giving Google Glass and Sony smartwatches to staff greeting business class passengers. We're one of you. So spring of next year, United attendants will have a new way to ignore you. That's good.
They'll be playing Crossy Road.
I'm playing Words with Friends. I can't talk right now.
Mr. Baldwin, sit down.
Well, I think that when you think about how this is going to be used, not only for an airline, but again, at a ballpark or at a restaurant, you know, there's really going to get to a point where you sit down at a restaurant, for instance, and unless you want to talk to the waiter, you go and sit there on your iPhone and order, you know, what you want, and then it all goes into the computer system just like they were typing it.
I don't think any business in their right mind would say you have to have an iPhone.
Oh, no. I don't think – I think that they'll develop – I'm sure that they will develop solutions for Android for the consumer.
But that's the risk to going all in on this stuff is, yeah, that's nice for iPhone users, but what about people who don't? And by the way, more than half of your customers are not iPhone users.
The back end is just a front end that's Apple. The back end will probably be through web technologies or through some form of transit will work with everybody. Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is great for Apple, but –
Well, Apple makes their money on the hardware. As long as they buy the iPhones, Apple's happy. They don't care.
I think Apple's going to be making the money on the transactions too, though. Come on now. $34 billion. They're going to make a little bit of money on that.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I think that the consumer apps can be Android. And I think that what United has definitely decided is their internal apps are all going to be iOS. That's where the only way they can just bite down and say this is the way it's going to be is give everybody... You know, all the pilots got iPads, all the flight attendants get, you know, iPhones, and that way they're iOS for their front end. And that makes a lot of sense if you're already happy with the platform that you're on, is just to make it all one platform. It doesn't matter whether it's Android or iOS. It's just developing for both of them all the time, takes up extra resources. And I also don't know if half or over half of the United users are, it'd be interesting to see. They probably have data that we don't. About, you know, exactly what percentage uses iPhone versus Android, which could be affecting some of the decisions.
Did you guys see the wave of IBM apps that came out of the partnership? Because they don't look like enterprise apps the way I used to use them.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, I heard the first couple have come out yesterday. Yeah.
And one of them is an Air Canada app, and it looks tremendous. Apple has a whole page up. I forget what the address is, but it's something easy to look for. If you go to the PR page, there's a link to it. And it shows screenshots from every one. I think there's a dozen apps, and all of them look like you'd expect an iOS app to look like.
Neat.
Almost like they're treating enterprise like humans.
IBM mobile first for iOS. Enterprise insights in the palm of your hand. Well, this all started with the bring your own device thing, right? People are bringing the iOS devices in, so we better make sure they work. It's great for Apple.
nice color screens, great design.
Even the website looks Apple-y. This is an IBM website.
Yeah, the Apple version is actually better because they show you all of the apps.
Let me see if I can find it. Yeah.
On Apple.com. I'll look for it too. But you think that usually you got, like, at best a really bad website that you could access things with.
Right.
And I don't know if it's Apple.com/IBM, but it's something like that. Apple.com/iPad/business.
Business.
Yeah.
It's business time.
Actually, that's... And then if
great
you click on check out
are
the
happening
apps,
in enterprise. Check out the
right
apps.
Under the, yeah.
The most enterprising apps ever. This is an Air Canada
app. Why
hiring
George Takei for this campaign?
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
You'll
oh
find my. That our apps are quite enterprising. Yes.
Well, you know, it would be funny if they looked like Lotus Notes. That would be funny.
Yeah. Like what are the slash commands for that?
Yeah.
Maximizer, nice. All those horrible enterprise tools
with
that you had to use.
With the Passenger Plus app, flight attendants have a powerful tool. See, here you go. To deliver a whole new level of customer service for passengers who experience delays. With iPad in hand, flight attendants can subdue and calm. No. That's good. I think you would feel more comfortable, wouldn't you, if the you went to the desk instead of them standing behind a desk. They could stand next to you, and they're holding their iPad, and they're going like this. I think
well, do you remember before there were computers in stores, and then slowly more and more stores got computers, yeah, and then more and more stores went online, and then more and more stores got online transactions, and now they're getting mobile. They're just a few years behind the rest of the world, but they're making the same sort of migration that everyone else is.
Retail stores now have a quick, easy way to streamline order fulfillment with the Pick and Pack app. I like the name Pick and Pack. Now, could I go to the app store and just download these and play with them? No.
No, these are all enterprise distributed apps.
Right. Too bad. That'd be fun. Ooh, insurance. Retaining customers was never this easy. Telco. Delivering great service all day long. I guess Verizon's not going to use that one. Government, law enforcement, and social work get mobilized by innovation. Look at that. Backup is on the way.
Tasty, tasty innovation.
It's like Uber for cops.
Bankroll that, Leo. That's a brilliant.
I need a cop now. Incident aware app. Police officers can know each other's whereabouts with greater insights in emergency situations. Wow. Hey, if anybody's watching and uses these, let us know. Give us an email or make a YouTube video. I'd love to see what your experience has been with this stuff. These are the first of many, I'm sure, IBM apps designed for iOS. Neat.
Yep.
At least there's some issue from this particular IBM Apple union. Remember the Taligent and the Stillborn Pink.
Well, and you can tell there's some guys from the HI department sort of helping out, making them look like this. I don't think this is, you know, what IBM would brew up on their own.
No, this is really interesting. I wonder what I'd be particularly interested in if any law enforcement jurisdictions are using these. I'd love to see that in action. Next on Cops. Bad boys. Got another.
He's going for your iPhone.
Apple now requires cases protect devices from 1 meter drops. So if you want a made for iPhone, if you buy a made for iPhone case, you can drop your phone from a meter, which for those of us in the U.S. is 3.2 feet.
Exactly.
And they're restricting some materials for environmental reasons. You may not use formaldehyde, endangered species, PFOS, PFOA, PBDE, PBB, or phthalates in your cases. So knock it off. Phthalates are banned in children's toys.
That embalmed elephant case is just illegal now.
Yeah.
How about flubber? Can you still make them?
You can make them with flubber if you want to make a light case.
Well, and that also really helps with the whole 1 meter requirement.
It never touches the ground.
I want a case where it just floats. I drop the phone
unobtainium,
and it just
floats.
Unobtainium. Apple reverses courses on Transmit. We talked about Panic software and Transmit. It had a send to button in the notification center. Apple said, but they almost instantly after we talked about it changed their mind. Yeah. Which just underscores what you were saying, Renee, which is they've got to come up with some consistency here. It's too confusing.
Well, I mean, it's on iOS, the original the original thing that they had was you couldn't upload files unless your app created them or edited them, because they wanted to make sure that the app had ownership, because they take the security and sandboxing model seriously. And they didn't want, for example, for it to get abused, like some developer to make a fake app that just takes all your files and uploads it to their to some arbitrary location. But it turns out Panic had a really good use for it, you know, sort of like an FTP client, and then they have to reconsider. It's really similar to when they said, you're not allowed making fun of political figures, and then some guy goes, I'm an editorial cartoonist. And they're like, oh, okay, wait a minute. So they come up with these laws that sort of have some good intentions, but then something what they call "quote unquote" unforeseen happens, and they have to reevaluate them.
Yeah.
But it's a process, and we're getting good results with it so far. I mean, it's a horrible, ugly process, but we're getting pCalc and we're getting Transmit.
Right. I think you're right. They need a vice president of App Store.
It would be nice.
Renee Ritchie wrote a great article at iMore. Apple's Hour of Code workshops delight kids of all ages. What is the Hour of Code, Renee?
So this is a great thing. And I just want to credit Trinity Caldwell did all the photos. She did a fantastic job with those.
Oh, these are great.
So Hour of Code is from code.org, and a lot of companies participated. And Apple's method of participating was to host about three sessions at each retail store last Thursday. And you could go in. It was for kids K to 12. You just made a reservation, and you went in, and they sat you around a big table. And they used examples from Angry Birds, Plants vs. Zombies, and other popular games to teach kids the basics of code. So you'd be given a little problem, and you'd be able to drag and drop things that were like loops or things that were like basic instructions. And when you got them right, it would solve that problem. And then you'd be shown a video of Bill Gates or of Mark Zuckerberg or of some other really famous programmer telling you about what, you know, what you'd use to solve it. Like Bill Gates explained the loops. And it was fantastic. They had about 4 Apple specialists for 8 kids. So they got a lot of attention. They were all given Apple headsets to keep so they could listen to the videos without having to worry about the noise in the stores and everything. And they came around. The parents could get involved if they wanted to. And they did 3 sessions in a row. And the bigger flagship stores had developers come in and give talks as well, so the kids could get, you know, some actual people to communicate with as well. And I took my 6-year-old and 9-year-old godchildren there, and they loved it. And at the very end, I said, so do you want to make video games? And the 9-year-old said, only for my entire life.
I like the reaction that you quote in the article, and that one kid said, why couldn't it be 2 hours of code? Bill, by the way, created Microsoft. He's explaining loops here. Here's Bill. You don't hear it. Is that me? Yes.
Before you go out.
Here, let's start over.
People make decisions every day. For example, before you go outside, you kind of have an if statement that says, if it's raining, then I need to get my jacket. And computers are amazing once you decide.
I think Bill's making this up as he goes along.
Statements that they can reliably execute those things at unbelievable speed.
He can probably speak extemporaneously.
And so a computer program really is a little bit of math and some if statements where the decision gets.
Daddy, who's that old man?
In this puzzle, the if block.
Anyway, that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. Did the Plants vs. Zombies people work with
And if you go to code.org, you can actually do all these at home. You can do it on the website. You can save your progress. They have all the videos online. So if you couldn't get to an Apple store, iTunes also has a bunch of content up that they're linking to podcasts and books and things like that. And it's really great.
Code.org if you want to
Mark
know more.
Mark Zuckerberg does not look any bit different.
He's exactly like his high school picture.
He could actually attend these sessions.
Because he's only like 10 years older.
That's right. He basically
That's kind of unfair for the other CEOs, really.
I know who Mark is, but who's this Bill guy? I love it. Hour of Code. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now remember, children, sandboxing is very, very important.
And it's worth pointing out that
APIs, that's what all good software programmers do. They ask the manufacturer, what APIs can I use and how can I use them?
They also have field trips for schools. You can sign up on the Apple retail pages, and they have a summer camp, and they'll show kids how to make videos or how to make ebooks. Yeah, there's a lot of resources for children there.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, our picks of the week, Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, Alex Lindsay are here, the core group of Mac Break Weekly. Your picks, gentlemen. Start your engines. First, though, a word from FreshBooks, nice Canadian company. They're nice. I discovered them actually in Canada because I was going to Toronto 1 week a month and had to Bill Rogers for the call for help he did there. And I was doing it in Microsoft Word. And I remember just complaining no end to Amber MacArthur. And she said, hey, you should try this new thing. They just started in 2004, called FreshBooks. I started doing all my invoicing from FreshBooks, and man, it changed my life. First of all, a lot easier to create an invoice. Also, a lot faster to get paid. They say on average, FreshBooks customers get paid an average of 5 days faster, and that's because there's a button on the invoice that says, pay me now. Turns out clients aren't adverse to paying you. They're just like you. They put it off. So make it easy. They pay more quickly. Now FreshBooks has award-winning mobile apps that'll let you do everything from your iOS device. Also track hours. Get that right into the bill, the invoice. Also keep track of expenses. You can snap photos of receipts right from your phone. Automated late payment reminders mean that you don't have to ever worry about those kind of tense, awkward calls and emails to your late paying clients. You get great financial reports that helps you do better in your business and helps your accountant come tax time get it all done. In fact, make 2015 the year you start using FreshBooks. Connect FreshBooks and third-party apps like Chronomate to make it much easier. They have an open API, too, so there are many developers now integrating with the FreshBooks platform. Amber MacArthur of BNN's App Central says FreshBooks, she's still using it. FreshBooks Mobile allows me to quickly send invoices and check in on my business no matter where I am. You will love FreshBooks. We've got a 30-day trial for you right now, freshbooks.com/MacBreak. It's accounting for the non-accountant. But you know what? You got to do it. So make it easy on yourself. Freshbooks.com/MacBreak. All we ask, if you don't mind, where they have that little field that says, how'd you hear about us? Just mention MacBreak Weekly. That'd be nice. Freshbooks.com/MacBreak. Alex Lindsay is in Rwanda. Apparently 5 minutes from Hotel Rwanda.
Yeah, it's right down the street. You just have to, it's not a good time to walk, though, because it's a very safe street, actually, through here. Rwanda is actually very safe itself. But the bats.
Bats?
They have bat dropping.
It's safe except for the bats.
The bats. Fruit bats. They're this big. And the poop is unbelievable. And,
well, they eat a lot of fruit.
Exactly. Well, and the crazy thing is I thought that it was random, but then I realized they're really pooping at me.
So, oh no! They aim it.
So, I don't know. It feels like
sonar.
It.
So is there nothing it can't do?
I know. So anyway, so it's right down the street, but it's a much different place than as I've said in the past. It's a very safe country. I'm here working at the school. We're doing some planning sessions and lots of meetings, and I'm going to be going into the rural areas to look at some of the workforce training schools out in the country on Thursday and Friday.
Awesome.
So pretty excited.
Really great. What do you got for us?
Two things. One is a very little. This is I started getting these, and now I've got a lot of them. It's made by Kero, K-E-R-O, and all it is just a little, very, very tiny USB to lightning bolt. And when you travel a lot, a lot of people watching the show are going to be like, okay, this is.
No, I like shorties. That. Yeah.
But the thing is that this is really nice. It's got a little cap that you can attach to things, which I kind of like. So some of these I have attached to my bag, and I just pull it off my bag and do it. So that, you know, being able to attach the cap to the bag on the outside is geeky, but useful.
You're like Batman with your utility bag.
Hey, you never know when you need to charge. So anyway, I travel a lot. It's like every time you see like a little outlet, you're like huddling over there and hoping that they're using a Mac so that they'll let you share the outlet. Anyway, so the so Kero, they're not the cheapest, but they're really, really useful. They're durable and I like them a lot. So anyway, so that's one. And then the other one, every time I do the show from somewhere and I have my earpiece in, someone asks which one that I use, the IFBs. I get these little Twitter things. So I thought I'd just say it. This is Audio Implements. These are the IFBs. There's a lot of them that are cheaper than these ones. These ones
so
are the best
like
ones.
Headphones?
So this is an IFB. So it is...
In-ear.
I'm going to pull my mic out with me. So this is kind of what you'd see in broadcast. Yeah. You know, you just have a little earpiece.
Yeah.
That was I don't invisible. Have the molded one. Even... They do the molded ones. I don't have the molded one, but it just goes over your ear. Yeah. And it's just a little bit more subtle than, you know, it's not very good for radio, but it's good for when you're doing this and you don't want... Mm-hmm. big headphones or something like that. And there's, you know, these are, you buy them in different pieces. The actual speaker is right here, this little bit right here. And then you have the little tube. And then there's a variety of these little earpieces. These little hard ones are horrible, but the what they call the accordion, which is this one here, it's really dirty right now, so I apologize. I won't get it too close to the camera, but it just sticks right in there. And you can get molded ones. And when we work with a lot of broadcasters, since this part pops off here, you can pop it on, and a lot of broadcasters and politicians and stuff will have their own, because they have their own molded one to their ear. You can pop it in. So anyway, they are, you know, it took a little while to figure out who the best people were. We went through a lot of IFBs, and these are definitely the best. It's about $130 bucks, I think, for which is, you know, I'll show you the one that I moved to at the office next time we do this, but which doesn't have any cables at all. It's more expensive, but this one is really, really good. If you're really serious about it and you want to get, you know, one that really works. I said, I get questions about it every single time, so I figured I'd make it a recommendation and get it over with. That's it.
Love it. Thank you, Alex. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have a stacked list of picks this week because a bunch of really good stuff came out. The first are two apps by Contrast. They're the people who make Launch Center Pro, and they've sort of broken out an enhanced specific area of functionality. One is called Group Text Plus, and the other is called Email Plus. They do the same thing, but one for messages and one for email. So basically, you can create groups of people, and then you can create sort of actions, and then what makes it so great is with iOS 8, you can save those actions to the share sheet so that you can do something like send a picture to my family or, you know, take my location and tell them when I'm going to be home. And it makes the process of texting or emailing just that much faster because it launches your actions, not just the apps. So if texting certain groups or certain people or doing certain actions are a frequent thing for you, these apps are a great way of doing it. And because they're separate apps for email and for text, you can set up separate actions for both of those things. You don't have to, you know, choose between one or the other. The second app, I don't think anyone has picked this yet. If they have, I apologize, but it's called Workflow. And it's one of those apps that make you go, oh my goodness, an iPhone can do this. And it's by a group of really, really young developers, which makes it even more impressive. And basically, it's like Automator for the iPhone. And that's a huge statement to make, but it really is true. When you launch the app for the first time, it shows you how to set up a workflow where it takes several pictures, makes them into an animated GIF, and then allows you to share that GIF. I've had friends who've made workflows where it takes a photo, puts some text on it, and sends it to Twitter as an automatic meme generator. And like the list of things that you can do just goes on and on, and you can make and share the different workflows as well. And it really, it makes you start to redefine your expectations for the iPhone as a productivity tool. And again, it's one of those things that you can save the actions to the share sheet. So it's one of those things that iOS 8 makes not only possible, but just so much better. It's incredibly, incredibly impressive app. And Federico Vitici at Mac Stories has been doing, you know, he's the king of iOS automation. He's been doing some amazing, amazing stuff with it. And the last thing, I just wanted to give a cheap plug to our iMore Awards. They went live today, so we went through and picked what we think are all the best apps for Mac and iOS and all the best accessories and the best devices of 2014. Workflow is one of them. Our app of the year was Pixelmator. Mac app of the year. We have all sorts of stuff. The stuff that we think was just the very, very best this year. So if you're looking for even more picks.
It's a good list.
Yeah, this was put together by Derek Kessler. It does a great job designing these things.
Nice. Very good. And that is at imore.com. Actually, just go to imore.com because the full
right on the front.
Yeah, it's right on the front page. Very nice. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Andy and Iko's pick of the week.
I got a couple of holiday ones this time because it's no good to give you a holiday pick like when you can only enjoy it for about a day and a half. So I'm going to give a plug for an Audible book, Patrick Stewart performing his one-man show version of A Christmas Carol. This has been a tradition for me ever since I bought it on cassette when I was a few years after it first came out, and then I had to buy it on CD, and then I had to get it on Audible. His performance of this predates his time on Star Trek The Next Generation. He just has been cultivating this one-man performance of a sort of reduced version of A Christmas Carol. He does all the characters. He does all the voices. He makes a few edits that speed things along. And this is the performance of a guy who absolutely knows this show and loves doing it year after year after year. And I'm not joking. This really is like part of my holiday is the day that it used to be the day that I would take these cassettes out of the glove box and put them into the center console and start playing them. And now it's the day when I make sure that they're synced to all of my devices so that I can keep listening to them time after time. The second thing is that, and this is something that a lot of people are going to be very interested in knowing, that the very, very last David Letterman Super Holiday Show is going to air on Friday. This is the one where this is the one where Darlene Love does the version of A Christmas Baby, Please Come Home, which they've been doing for about 30 years. This is where Jay Thomas comes on and he and Dave throw footballs at a Christmas tree to knock a meatball off the top of it. Jay Thomas also tells his story about the Lone Ranger. They've been doing this in the same format year after year after year. Another thing that I'm not embarrassed to say is a beloved holiday tradition. It's like if I were to ever miss this, it would just not be as good a Christmas celebration as possible. And this year, this is the very last one, and I have tickets to the actual show itself on
Thursday.
You get
to go?
I'm going to be there. And if you listen to somebody who see, gosh, that sounds like a really high, girly voice, but as though it was from the diaphragm of a middle-aged man, that's me cheering for Darlene Love.
You know? Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad you get to go.
Yeah, great. I'm pretty excited about it. I have a friend who was nice enough to arrange for me to get a couple of tickets to that.
It is the last one because he's retiring.
Yeah, exactly. And just take a look at the montage that the show posted on YouTube yesterday of just year after year after year of these things. Yeah. It really is. It just watch Paul Schaefer in the background because he grew up on this kind of Phil Spector music, and he just is he is just like a little kid playing this music. It's just fantastic.
Oh, you're gonna have a blast! I'm so jealous.
Boy, I might have to bring extra underwear because I'm just so excited. Even in concept of seeing this live.
Now, if they know who you are, they'll put you in the balcony. That's okay. You got a good view.
Well, no, actually, the balcony is this is for anybody who is going to go see Letterman before the show ends in May. The balcony is actually the place you want to be because it's the only place you can see the entire show without being blocked by cameras moving right in and out. There is an email that arrived with it saying we have an unusual number of guests for this show, and so you might be seated in the orchestra. I don't care. I'd like to be seated outside. Yeah, exactly.
I want to be seated in the orchestra.
Anywhere where audio is bouncing off of is coming out of Darlene Love and bouncing around and landing in here, that's fine. I'm good.
One of my favorite memories is seeing Letterman live. It really is a treat.
Yeah,
but this is a special one to see live.
Yeah, and if you've never had the chance, part of the joy of seeing any Letterman show live is the band plays through all the commercial breaks.
Yeah,
and goodness gracious, as impressed as you are with the work this band does during the show itself, when you hear them just play 3 to sometimes 7 minutes of uninterrupted rock, wow, what a sad loss it's going to be when this band breaks up and is no longer performing together. I hope they record something to leave the fans with because they're just phenomenal.
It'll be something like the experience we San Francisco Giants fans are going through in the off season as they slowly tear our team apart limb by limb. Thank you, Andy and Akko, Chicago Sun-Times. Ladies and gentlemen, the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, and you probably catch them at the Chicago Public Library taking pictures going around, shooting round pillars at people. Nice to have you, Andy.
Only with permission.
Next week, by the way, we will not be here. You have the week off. I don't know if we told you that.
Did not know that. I'm doubly glad I did the holiday picks.
Me too.
shoot. We did. Right?
Too late. We're showing up, Leo.
Am I wrong? But I believe that next week is Christmas week, and we're doing the best of Mac Break Weekly.
That's right.
So you may take the week off. We will see you, though, the week after that, right before New Year. On December 30th. We aren't doing shows New Year's Eve, but New Year's Eve, we'll be doing shows. Rene Ritchie is at imore.com. He is such a great guy to have on this show because you just know what's going on. You're in the insider's insides.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. At Rene Ritchie on the Twitter. And all the way from Rwanda, the country that doesn't care. because it's got money. I don't know. I'm making up a slogan for a country. I shouldn't do that. I don't know. Alex Lindsay.
It's Pixel the land Court. Of a thousand hills.
The land the of property. A thousand hills.
In fairness, everybody, it's not all about the giant bats that keep people covering in terror at
the
night.
The land of a thousand bat guano hits.
You know, they're doing all this great work in tech and internet, and all I did is bring up the bats. But anyway,
I really appreciate you spending your evening with us. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific on Tuesday. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. We love having you here live and even in studio. We've got some nice people in studio here. You can email tickets at twit.tv if you'd like to. We'll put a chair out for you. But you can also watch on twit.tv. If you can't watch live, you can't be here live, don't forget we have on-demand audio and video of all of our shows, everything we do here. On the web, twit.tv/MBW in this case. But you can also get it wherever you get your favorite netcasts or use those great apps that our third-party app developers have very kindly created for us on every platform, including Roku. Next week, our holiday special, the best of Mac Break Weekly. That's exciting. And then the following week, we'll be back here talking about the year end and what to look forward to in 2015. It's going to be a big year for Apple. Do we need, we still need a few time zones? Alaska. We got Alaska? No. Why? We have Sarah Palin. Somebody, please go to twit.tv/NYE for New Year's Eve. If you can see Russia from your backyard, please, we'd like to have you for New Year's Eve. We're going every time zone.
Is that all we're missing?
Oh, no, there's a few others. There's some, mostly islands. Jarvis Island. We're missing Jarvis Island, of all things. That's the 3 a.m. New Year's Day, the very last. But we were going to be doing countdowns. Oh, and it's for UNICEF, by the way. It's for charity. We're going to raise money for charity. We have auctions. We have giveaways. And we'll be taking pledges. It's Jerry Lewis style, Andy. And if you want to be here and sing You'll Never Walk Alone, I wouldn't stop you.
Maybe I can Arduino up a tote board.
We have a tote board.
There you go.
We have a tote board.
This is slick.
We need Norfolk Island. Say that three times fast. Northern Marianas Islands, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Bangladesh, Burma, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, the Azores. Surely there's somebody in Cape Verde. Trinidad, Alaska, and Midway. Samoa, anywhere.
If you're in orbit over one of those places.
It doesn't matter. Lie. Set your clock to a different time. But we've got almost all the others. There's 27 of them. We've got somebody in Fiji. We've got somebody in Alice Springs in Japan. We've got
India. Can you contact the governments of the respective islands and ask, for $100 cash, will you, like, deputize somebody here in San Francisco as an official, like, ambassador of your from
I
your
think
island?
So. Right.
And, like, we could like, tape off, like, a square foot of the studio that this is consul area for this area just for that time.
We actually may have a guy.
It would be a shame to color in the whole map.
We may have a guy who will be flying over the international dateline, and he's just going to keep having a New Year countdown every 5 seconds.
Yeah, just go 2,000 miles an hour with the orbit of the Earth and call Leo every half hour.
We've got. I am so thrilled here. We get the people we've got participating. It's just fantastic. Port Lincoln, South Korea, India. We've got Dubai. We've got Saudi Arabia, Cairo. Switzerland. So it's going to be
Belgium
fun.
Belgium has freedom. Canada has freedom.
So that's 3 a.m. New Year's Eve to 3 a.m. New Year's Day. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. That's going to be a lot of fun.
That's amazing. That, you know, if in the Christian Science Monitor building in Boston, there is a huge stained glass globe you can walk into. And the stained glass, it's a map of the entire world. And they created this publication in the 1930s, I think, to demonstrate here is the reach of our publication. Here's all the countries where this was. It's like you're building your own stained glass,
that's pretty cool.
80-foot wide globe.
And it's all because I was just mad that Rockin' New Year's Eve ended at 9 p.m. Pacific. That's it. That's the seed of all of this. I think we're going to raise some good money, too, for a very, very good cause.
Awesome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Now you all get back to work because you know what? Break time is over.